It's very possible that my sermon title scared lots of people away this morning. Is Bernie Sanders right? Now, first off, I want you to know that I do not consider myself a political person. Part of that is just my upbringing, Canadian, German, working class, rural, farmer. You know, we didn't follow anything but hockey. And my parents, they ended up usually on opposite sides of whatever political issues were there. My mom would want to vote one way and my dad would want to vote the other, and they talk it out. Okay, you stay home and I'll stay home, and it's the same thing. So that is where I come from. Now, I know that it's totally un-American, but that's part of my heritage. So when I talk about what exactly is a democratic socialist, you need to know that I'm treading on thin ground. But essentially, we have democratic socialism already in a lot of different places and a lot of different ways. In my thinking, a homeowners association would be an illustration of a democratic socialist. Bernie Sanders is a democratic socialist, and surprisingly, his net worth is only $3 million. Unlike some of our other people who've run for presidency, he at least knows how many homes he has. And I'm making an allusion to McCain in Arizona, not Trump. But the idea of a democratic socialist is that you are part of a group. The group makes rules, and the rules everyone has to follow. So if the homeowners association decides that they need a new fence someplace, or they need to have a party, they pass a law. And whether you vote against it or whether you vote for it, if the majority votes for it, then you have to pay. So everybody pays towards that project. And your options are either pay and or not pay. If you don't pay, then you eventually lose your home and you have to move out of the association. But Bernie Sanders' idea is that there should be equality among all people in the United States. And that ought to be done through a governmental jurisdiction. It's a redistribution of wealth. And so at the heart of this is the absence of property ownership. So in a homeowners association, you own your property, and if you don't want to cooperate with the homeowners association, you can sell your property and move someplace where there isn't, you know, presumably somebody as dumb as you will buy it. Sorry. I don't have a homeowners association, but those of you who do know what happens if the homeowners association goes this way and you decide to go a different way. That doesn't work. Now, there is no question in my mind that there are many Protestants that believe in a democratic socialism or a socialism altogether, and they use scripture to justify it. And the passage where we are today is 2 Corinthians chapter 8, and we're in verses 13 through 24. So obviously we're going to have to hurry. Now, I want to put you at ease here because you may have dinner plans. I am going to spend more time on the first point, which is verses 13 to 15, than I am on the next 2 points, although I have far more illustrations on the latter part than I do on the first part. But the concept that we need to look at is that we should be biblical and not get sucked into one political philosophy or another. And right now, I see a tremendous surge among people who are 40 and younger towards socialism. I left my phone over there, but I took a picture of a boy who's mowing yards and saving his money to buy school supplies for himself and all of his siblings. He's the oldest of 5 or 6 children, and Epic Times is running a story about him as this little boy is out, he's probably 7th grade, working to earn money to pay for the school supplies for his family. And right above it is our president with a new way of forgiving some billion numbers of dollars in student loans. And it's a stark contrast in worldview. This one is capitalism. This one is socialism. Okay? Those are the two issues. And this younger group of people that are coming up, 40 and younger, have had a worldview that's fed to them that it is wrong, inherently wrong, for people to own things and other people not to own things. Some years ago, this came up, and a person was opposed to Lunch Bunch, and they weren't going to go to Lunch Bunch anymore because not everybody in the church could afford to go to Lunch Bunch. And no amount of reasoning made any difference. Well, so if someone can't afford to buy a house, should we all move into apartments? You know, the logic of it wasn't the issue. Well, we don't want anybody to feel bad. Well, whether they feel bad or not has to do with how they view life, not whether you go to lunch or not. So this kind of a worldview. And when their government is redistributing wealth, this younger generation thinks that's a perfectly good thing. All those rich people ought to share with me because I don't have as much as they do. And here's the sticky wicket. They blame Scripture for that because of mistranslations like where we are today. Is that an introduction?
Sure.
All right. For it is not my purpose. I'm in 2 Corinthians chapter 8, verse 13. For it is not my purpose that others have peace, rest, freedom, liberty, and you should have affliction and tribulation. Paul's writing to the Corinthians, and he's talking about the Macedonian churches like Corinth and Thessalonica. Like Thessalonica and Philippi, he's writing to Corinth. But what is equitable? Okay, this term equitable is translated equality. And that's a bad translation. Because your text, how many of you have a text that says equality? Okay, that's a terrible translation. It should be, but what is equitable? And I'll explain that when I come to the second term in this passage, why it needs to be translated what is equitable. In the now time, your abundance, your overflow, what you have, the Corinthians were rich, you have more than enough unto those believers who have a lack. The Jerusalem church was dirt poor. In order that also the overflow of abundance of those believers should become unto you the lack. So maybe this means that the Jerusalem mother church was responsible for the doctrine that came to them. It could also mean that he's comparing the Macedonian churches with the churches in Achaia, in which he's wanting them to be equally sharing in this project, okay? That they're both involved with it, which is collecting money for the Jerusalem saints. Verse 14, in order that also the overflow or abundance of those believers should become unto you the lack, so that there should be equity. There's that term again. There should be equity. Just as it has been written, the one with much did not have too much, and the one with little did not have too little. All right, so here's my point. God provides what we need. This is verses 13 to 15. And the passage he quotes from Exodus 16, I would have gone through that this morning, but I spent more time in Sunday school doing other stuff. In that passage, they all go out and gather manna. Okay, look up here. Who sent the manna?
God.
God. The instructions he gave was that you gather what you need for the number of members in your family. Okay? So if you have 8 kids, then you gather 8 buckets. If you have no kids, you gather 1 bucket. So the equity here is that God provides for everyone. So there are here in our congregation those who have no children, those who have many children, Okay? God provides for us all. And it's out of what God gives to us that we plan to give generously and cheerfully according to how the Lord wants us to do it. But now here's the proof that this should be translated equity and not equality. Look over at Colossians chapter 4, a couple of doors to the right. Colossians chapter 4, verse 1. Boy, if there's ever an important passage, this is it. Masters, give your servants what is just and fair, knowing that you also have a master in heaven. All right, which term do you think is exactly the same term as your translators translate equality?
Just and fair.
Okay, just and fair. Those are two terms. Which of those two? Fair. Give what is fair, what is equitable. Do you see that there is no adjustments here as to station or status or ownership? He's not instructing the masters to be on an equality or equal base with the servants. No, they're masters. He's not instructing them to sell everything that they have and become a servant. He's not arguing for equality. He's arguing for equity. So what is right or just, and what is fair or equitable? So if I were a slave, I would be glad if my master fill in the blank. That's just, that's fair, or equitable. So in this issue, socialism, as it's purported in our culture, is wrong. It's not right because it violates the fundamental law of ownership. And when you lose this concept of you shall not steal, and that humans are all managers and God owns everything, it is improper or wrong or sin to lose the concept of ownership. And so from the start, we teach our children, don't take that, that doesn't belong to you, that's your brother. Brother, it would be nice of you to share. You share because you are a manager, but it's yours, so you can't go take it without permission. However, in the generation that we find ourselves, and increasingly those who are in leadership, are looking for votes to redistribute the wealth of the nation from the owners to the non-owners, and they're calling it socialism, and they're justifying it on passages like Acts chapter 5 and 2 Corinthians. See, God wants everything equal, but that's not what this text is saying. The point here that Paul is making, lest we lose it in the politics, the point Paul is making is that God provides what we need. And out of what he has given to us, then we decide what we're going to do towards the church, towards, in this case, Paul's missionary project. Now, verses 16 to 19, sharing is a big deal. I didn't use the term giving because that rings all kinds of concepts that have been abused, but sharing is a much better concept, and it's a big deal in the New Testament. Let's look at verses 16 to 19. Now, giving thanks to God, the one having given the same earnestness on behalf of you in the heart of Titus, so Paul is giving thanks to God because there's a real earnestness in Titus's heart. Because on the one hand, he accepted the exhortation, Paul was encouraging him or exhorting him to go. And on the other hand, he was being in an eager state of his own accord. He really wanted to go and see the Corinthians and be a part of this sharing. He went to you face to face. So Paul is giving thanks that Titus wanted to go, and he listened to the exhortation, and he went to them face to face. Now we have dispatched with him the brother of whom the commendation in the gospel throughout all the churches. We don't know who this is, but it's a big deal. So there are a number of people who are handling the funds here. Okay? A number of people. This isn't for safety reasons. It's for accountability reasons. And this guy, he's known and commended in the gospel throughout all the churches. And not only that one, but also having been, not only that, but also having been elected, this is literally chosen by the uplifted hand, by the churches as our traveling companion with this gift, the one being ministered by us to the glory of the Lord himself and our eager enthusiasm. So in this passage, what we see is that we need to be good managers of money that is shared from one church to other projects. So in the money that we've collected for Africa, I will travel with it because you can't wire it and get it there. And Charlie will go with me. And Charlie is bringing money from the churches that he serves and ministers to. And we'll sit down with Aniset, and Aniset will sign paperwork that he received what monies you sent. And that goes into our financial records here as a witness that Aniset signs off on it, Charlie signs off on it, I carry it, and I do the same for Charlie's, as a witness of Charlie's money and that he brings to Aniset. Now, reality is, once it's there in Africa, we lose track of it. Okay, I'm telling you that. I have seen the empty lots, and I have come back and seen the buildings that have been built. But once we bring it to Africa, it is up to them and their elders how they handle it. In the same way that Paul and these brothers would take it to the church in Jerusalem, to James, and James and their elders then would handle it and distribute it. And oh, I am so grateful to God that we do not distribute the African money, but rather entrust the brothers in Africa to do it. I was up country. One year, we had a team with us, and we had purchased for the women in the upcountry region a metal implement, a hoe, and a bolt of material that was 6 feet by 12 feet, colorful, that's for a dress, and soap, and 5 pounds of rice. I think it was rice, it might have been beef, it was rice, okay? And we brought this, purchased with money, there in Africa. And we were up country in a school. And the pastors made it known that they were going to distribute to the churches in that area, specifically the women, because this was a gift from the women on our team to the women in the Burundian churches. And they came from 20 miles. Walking, because the people heard. And there were 250, 300 people outside this building where we were. And it was the size of this classroom right back here, or the one on the other side of the kitchen. And the pastors, they took Charlie and myself and one other brother, and they stuck us in the front of the room, and then they let in, the pastors let in, starting with the oldest woman of that congregation, one at a time, and they would not let anybody else in. There was almost a riot outside, but these pastors were the ones that were running it. That was, you know, I'm still traumatized by that. You put 45, 50 East African women in one room, and it's a life-changing experience. But I'm so glad the brothers handled that and not us. That's the right way to do it. And that's what Paul would have done. So it's a big deal. Sharing is a big deal in the New Testament. They're not just doing, oh, well, why is it a big deal? Because the gift, listen to me, the gift that you share represents your hard-earned toil, which you are giving out of a heart of love to a God who keeps track of everything that you do and rewards you in this age and in the age to come. That's why it's wrong to take your hard-earned money and support somebody who could work for a living. Okay, it's wrong. Don't take anyone on the list unless they're a widow indeed. That is, they have no family. They're older than 60 and older. And this has been the course of life. And they've never been married but one time. Those are the only ones that can receive your hard-earned money. And you'd all say, well, that's right. Then there's other things they could do in the church that I'm too stupid or too busy to do. But they could do them. You see, that's... And if you don't follow that, one of you should say, this isn't right. That guy should go for a work. Go get a job. You shouldn't be living off of the church, right? So when you come to these biblical things, sharing is more than just money. It represents the essence of our lifeblood in what we're doing. All right, the last thing I want to say here is that we should be good managers. Let's look at verses 20 through the end of this passage. We should be good managers. Verse 20. Avoiding this, namely, no one, not anyone, should criticize us in this lavish gift. So Paul has these three going with him, Titus and the two unnamed brothers, because somebody might step up and say, you know, hey, you're not handling things right. You know, I remember, well, one time, the point is, we should not ever handle money in a way that would cause others to criticize us. This lavish gift, the one which is being ministered by us, making honorable provision, not only before the Lord, but also before people. This is the right way to do it. We're good managers, so we handle the funds carefully. And in our case, we have an external review. And our CPA comes, and this last time, I had everything laid out for him and tables down the hall. He went through, check, verified everything. And then he and his wife wanted to talk about their daughter and bees. Okay, but... You know, he's already done this here three times. This is the third time that he's come and reviewed our finances. And he knows, well, oh yeah, I remember. You are the guys that have all the transfers, because we have an envelope system. It's an electronic envelope. Oh yeah, you're the guys that do all the transfers. And it's perfectly good accounting. But he wants it to be making honorable provision before the Lord and before people. Now we have dispatched together with them our brother, whom we have proved to be genuine, and many times, often, being diligent. This guy is a hardworking, trustworthy, diligent individual. Now, at this time, much more eager or diligent because of the confidence, you're full of trust, a lot of full trust, which Paul has in you. And if anyone is inquiring about Titus, he's my fellow worker, my fellow partner, and my fellow worker among you. Or if anyone inquires about our brothers, they're sent. Literally apostles, or sent ones of the churches, to the glory of the Lord. Therefore, he says, this is the imperative, therefore show to them the proof or demonstration of your love and your boasting on behalf, or boasting on behalf of you in the presence of all the churches. So his conclusion here is that we should be good managers, and the argument that he's making is not for equality, but equity. And it's perfectly right and just that out of our abundance, we share generously with Africa. But this is under your control. Let each one of you, on the first day of the week, what you have set aside, bring for the collection, so that there will be no collections when I come. Okay? Why? Well, because God makes you the manager / owner of it, and you decide, based on what God has given you, what your planned, generous, and cheerful gift will be. So, in case you didn't know it, Bernie Sanders is wrong. Let's have a closing.